I first want to thank Rabbi Sosetsky for that very generous eulogy, but I can wait. I am always happy to be able to find the time to come here. This is a very, very fine yeshiva, obviously with a very chashuva rosh yeshiva in Rabbonim, Rabbeim. And in the past, I had some of my sons-in-law that learned here, in the Kol. So I have a special connection also. I remember 40 years ago, we were Zoche Klal Yisrael, to a tremendous nisim, tremendous chesed from the Rabbanu Shalom. I remember before the Six-Day War began, the Jewish world was in a turmoil, panic. Nasser, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, had threatened openly that he was going to throw every Jew, man, woman, and child in the sea. And I remember my Rosh Yeshiva of Gifter Zatzal, after the war, had said that if Chas v'Shalom, Eretz Yisrael, the community here, would have fallen during that war, then it wouldn't have been hours before they were shechting Jews in Times Square. So it was a Yeshua for Gans Klal Yisrael, tremendous Yeshua, tremendous Nisan. Nobody can dispute that. And Gedolei Yisrael said there were tremendous hodos to the Rabbanu Shalom given after that victory, and there was a tremendous isorus in the world, not only by Jews. I remember I was in Tells at the time, and one of the miracles of the war was that they permitted us to listen to radios Bein HaSidorim in Tells. That may have been the biggest miracle of the war. In order to hear what was going on, it was reports from the battlefield itself. And I remember hearing a BBC commentator say the following. This was already the third, fourth day of the war, and everybody was astounded at the turn of events. They thought that Eretz Yisrael was going to fall at least the first or second day. And we had all of our enemies. We were on the way to Damascus. And had the United States not stopped us, maybe there wouldn't be any problem today. Because there wouldn't be any Syria, no Jordan. We would be the rulers of all those places. In any case, I remember hearing a BBC commentator saying the following. He said with great passion, this is obviously a war between God and Allah, and God's knocking the heck out of Allah. That's how a goy saw it. So it was a tremendous, tremendous Kiddush Hashem, tremendous Nisim that happened at the time. And therefore, it's important to remember them and to get the proper hisoris from it. But it's also important to remember it in the proper way and not the improper way. This past week's Sedra is a very interesting Rashi. Torah says, as part of the Tochacha, that the Rabbanu Shalom is going to send an enemy against Klal Yisrael, and v'nesatem el oreichem, and you'll gather yourselves into your cities, v'shilachti dever besochechem, and I'll send the plague, v'nitatem biyad oyev, and that way you'll be given into the hands of your enemies. So Rashi explains what's going on, the plague and the enemy, well, how do they fit together? Rashi says the following. Says that the enemy is going to come, so you're going to run into the fortified cities. The most fortified city we had was Yerushalayim. So we'll run within the walls of Yerushalayim to be safe from the enemy. And then the Rabban Shem is going to send a plague inside Yerushalayim. And since Ein Malinim Es HaMeis B'Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to leave a mace overnight in Yerushalayim. You have to bury him outside the city. So they'll take the Mesim who die in the plague and bury them outside the walls, and when they go outside the walls to bury these people, they'll be delivered into the hands of the enemies. Think for a minute. Who are we talking about? We're talking about a generation, Churban Bayis Rishon, who are over Gili Arayah, Shvichas Domim, and Avodah Zarah. No small Aveiros. Their lives are in danger, and that's why they're in within the walls of Yerushalayim, in order to protect their lives. And these people are going to be Moser Nefesh and leave the walls of Yerushalayim because Ein Malinim Es HaMeis B'Yerushalayim. First of all, according to many opinions, it's only a Maila Darabona. It's not even a Din Daraisa. And even if it were the Din Daraisa, it's Pikuach Nefesh. If somebody dies in the Beis HaMikdash, you bury him under the Kodesh HaKadoshim if it's Pikuach Nefesh. So these people are going to risk their lives to take the bodies out of Yerushalayim because of a halacha, they malinim es hameis b'Yerushalayim. People who are over Gili Arayah, Shvichas Dom, and Avodah Zarah. Now I think that's exactly the tocha. When the Mishkan was finished, they couldn't put it together. They couldn't erect it. Couldn't put it up. So they went to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Rabban Shem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you put it up. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't. He said, don't worry, you put your hand on it, and I'll help you. I'll make sure you're able to put it up. And only Moshe Rabbeinu was able to put the Mishkan together. Why? The Meshech Chochmah says about something else, but it applies here. There is nothing in Yiddishkeit that has intrinsic holiness. Nothing. The holiness comes from the Torah. The Torah designates what's holy and what's not. And the Torah, Yisrael, the Oraisa, the Kudsha Brich, Uchadu, the Torah is Ratzon Hashem. The Rabban Shem gives the Kedusha. Har Sinai, very holy mountain. But as soon as the Shechinah left, animals could graze on it. The only reason that Har Abayis retains its Kedusha because the Shechinah never left. Kedusha comes from the Rabban Shel Olam and is filtered through the Torah, designated through the Torah. Nothing in this world has intrinsic Kedusha. And therefore, had they been able to put up the Mishkan by itself, they would have thought that the Mishkan was independently holy. They had to bring it to Moshe Rabbeinu, who represented Amud HaTorah. It's only Torah that confers holiness on the Mishkan, because the Torah says it's holy. What's the difference? When I was a rabbi in Miami, one day after Rosh Hashanah, I think it was on Tzom Gedalia, a woman called me frantic. Saved my husband's life. I said, what's the problem? She said, we just came back from the doctor. My husband has a life-threatening disease that's under control. He functions normally, but the doctor told him that he's not allowed to fast on Yom Kippur. And if he fasts, his life will be in danger. He has to eat 3 regular meals on Yom Kippur. And when we left the doctor, my husband said to me, I haven't eaten on Yom Kippur since my bar mitzvah, and I don't plan to start now. He was a man in his early 80s. And I'm not going to eat. I'm going to fast on Yom Kippur. And she said, I'm afraid my husband's going to die. Do something. So I called the man in, but first I called his doctor and found out why exactly he thought they'd have to eat 3 meals. And then I called another doctor, a frum doctor, and I gave him the circumstances of this man's condition, and I asked him, if you had a patient like this, what would you tell him to do for Yom Kippur? He told me, I'd tell him to eat 3 regular meals. This man, if he doesn't eat 3 regular meals, his life is in danger. I called the man in, and I said, I spoke to your wife, I spoke to your doctor, and I spoke to another doctor. And everybody confers that you have to eat 3 regular meals on Yom Kippur. He said, Rabbi, you're a nice man. You're about a third my age. That time I was much younger. And you can't tell me what to do. I haven't eaten on Yom Kippur since my bar mitzvah. I'm not going to eat this year either. So that's okay. I said, you're right. I can't tell you what to do. But I run this shul. And as soon as you leave this office, I'm going to call the gabbai and tell him never to give you a kibbutz in this shul again. Not even psichas ha'orim. Zero. He said, on what grounds? I said, we may be makel to give mechalel Shabbos aliyahs in this shul. But we have never given an Obed Avodah Zarah an aliyah, and you're not going to get one. He looked at me like I was out of my mind. I said, look, the God that we worship in this shul said that you have to eat on Yom Kippur. Now, obviously, you have a different God. Now, I don't really care if your God's name is Zeus or Jupiter or Yom Kippur. You have the Yom Kippur God. The Yom Kippur God said you have to fast. So if you want to worship the Yom Kippur God, that's fine with me. But you're an Obed Avodah Zarah. In this shul, you won't get an aliyah. He ate on Yom Kippur. But it wasn't a joke. If you give intrinsic value, intrinsic holiness to anything, even Yom Kippur, then it becomes an Avodah Zarah. Because Yom Kippur is important because the Torah said, because the Rabban Shalom said it's important. And that same Rabban Shalom said that in a time of Pikuach Nefesh you have to eat. So Yom Kippur, if it has intrinsic holiness, then you do it no matter what. And it doesn't depend on what the Torah says one way or the other. But if you understand that nothing in this world has intrinsic value or holiness except within the context of the framework of the Torah, then when the Torah says to eat on Yom Kippur, you eat on Yom Kippur. And when the Torah says that you leave the body in Yerushalayim and you don't take it out, then you leave the body in Yerushalayim. But if you make Yerushalayim or anything else into intrinsic values, intrinsic holiness, then it becomes an Avodah Zarah. And that's part of the Tochacha. They worshipped Avodah Zarah. They made certain things in Yiddishkeit Avodah Zarah. They made Yerushalayim into an Avodah Zarah. Not because the Torah said Yerushalayim is important, because they made it into something of intrinsic importance. And therefore, even sacrificing their lives for the sake of Yerushalayim became their Avodah Zarah. Even though the Rabban Shalom said you don't do such a thing. Even though the Torah says you don't do that. So we have to look at the value of Yerushalayim through the eyes of the Torah. What's the Torah tell us about Yerushalayim? How important is it? Why is it important? Under what circumstances is it important? That's the way a Shomer Torah mitzvah, a Ben Torah, looks at anything in this world. The Medrash says, how did Yerushalayim get its name? Shem ben Noach, Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem, gave Yerushalayim a name, called it Sholem, perfection. Avram Avinu came by later, and he changed the name. And Avram Avinu called Yerushalayim Har Hashem Yireh, Hashem Yireh. Yireh Yireh. So the Rabban Shalom had a problem. How should he refer to this city? If he calls it Shalem, Avram Avinu is going to be upset. If he calls it Yireh, then Shem ben Noach is going to be upset. So he put the two names together and he called it Yerushalayim. Big problem. He didn't satisfy anybody. First of all, he should have called it Shalem Yireh. Noach came first. Shem ben Noach came before Avram Avinu. So he should have called it first, the name that Shem did, and then add on the name. And he called it Yiru, and not Yireh or Yeroeh. That's not exactly the name that Avram gave. So nobody's happy. And it's not Shalem, it's Shalayim. So he put the order the wrong way, and he changed the words. So how is everybody happy now? A goy his manner of service to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. And Goyim also were created to serve the Rebbeinu Shlomo. The whole tachlis of the Bria was that every human being should recognize the Rebbeinu Shlomo in their way. You didn't have to recognize a different way, Goyim their way. It's important to the Rebbeinu Shlomo that Goyim recognize him. How do I know? Because it says by Kriyas Yamsu, the Yadu Mitzrayim Ki Ani Hashem. The whole purpose of splitting the sea and making that spectacular miracle was that Goyim should know there's a God. And Ibn Ezra says even more. Which Mitzrayim are we talking about? Ibn Ezra says one pshat, Mitzrayim, the ones that will survive back in Egypt. And the second pshat, he says, is the Egyptians that will drown. For the few minutes before they drown, will know there's a God. And it was kedai to do that tremendous nes for the few hundred goyim, for a few minutes, should know there's a God. Goyim also have avodas Hashem. But their avodah is completely different than ours. They serve God through nature. And as long as they accommodate the natural world and stay in harmony with it, they'll get a share in the world to come. That's why they have seven mitzvahs, the Maral says. Seven is the number of nature. Goyim lives in the natural world, and that's their tachlis, to remain in harmony with the natural world. They don't have to change anything. They just don't have to distort it. Don't distort it. Don't steal. Or most of their mitzvahs are los ases, not ases. That's why the symbol of a goyish avodah is a matzeva. A matzeva is one stone that you put up, natural, and you serve the Rebbeinu Shlomo on that stone. But we have a different avodah. We have a mizbeach. A mizbeach is you have to build. You can't leave it the way that it is. You have to build onto it. We have mitzvahs that go beyond nature. We have to build onto nature. And therefore, when Shem ben Noach saw Yerushalayim with all of its potential, with all of its segulas, he said, it's shalem, it's complete, nothing more to do. You live here, and you'll be able to be a complete person because you will be able to benefit from all the segulas, all the special things about Yerushalayim. Avraham Avinu, on the other hand, had a different look. Shleimus is not something you just get. It's something you have to create. Yerushalayim has a lot of potential, but we have to develop that potential and build on it. And therefore he called it Yireh Har Hashem Yireh Har Hashem Yeiroeh. God looks at us and we look at him. We come to learn how to be more like the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And he scrutinizes us to see if we are making the mark or not. So before you can have Shalem, first you have to have the Yireh and the Yeroeh. But since it says Yireh and Yeroeh, had the Rebbeinu Shlomo called it Yireh Shalem, it would have been Koveya only that meaning. Had he called it Yeroeh Shalem, it would have been Koveya that meaning. So he added the Aleph and the Hey together and he got a Vav. And the Vav symbolizes both possible readings, the Yeroeh and the Yireh. And then when you build on that natural perfection that Yerushalayim has, then it doesn't remain just the natural, physical, material perfection that it started with, but it becomes double. Shalayim. Yerushalayim shalmata, Yerushalayim shalmala. Then you add to that shleimus. You build that shleimus into something ruchniyus too, not just the skulos that it has in its gashmiyistika form. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo gave the name according to the Jewish perspective, for Avraham Avinu's perspective. But he kept Shem's idea that this is the place of perfection, but not perfection as a goy sees it. Perfection as a Jew has to see it. First you have the Yireh, the Roeh, and then not only do you have the Shleimus that existed, not only do you remain in harmony with nature, but you build onto it and create a double Shleimus. A Shleimus Ruchni also. How do you do that? So what are you supposed to do? How do you use Yerushalayim properly? In order to understand that, you have to understand first the tachlis of Eretz Yisrael. And in the context of the tachlis of Eretz Yisrael, we can understand the tachlis of Yerushalayim. Secular Zionism said that the purpose of Medinas Yisrael, the purpose of having a state, a country of our own, is in order that we can be normal. Herzl reasoned that we are hated by the nations of the world. Anti-Semitism exists because we're not normal. We live in other people's countries, speak their languages, use their post office, use their economies. And because we're not normal, we're like parasites. So the nations of the world hate us. But if we just be normal, like all of them, we'd have our own country and our own language and our own post office and our own economy, and subsequent Zionist thinkers added, and our own criminals and our own perverts. That was their loss and not mine. Then we'd be normal, just like the rest of the nations of the world, and they wouldn't hate us more than they hate each other, which I don't know how great that is anyway, but at least we wouldn't be singled out for special hatred. Didn't work. Baruch Hashem, today we have our own country and our own language and our own post office and our own economy and our own criminals too. Blue and white criminals. And the nations of the world just love us. They don't know what to do for us first. Not only haven't we solved the problem of anti-Semitism, we've created a new anti-Semitism, a more refined anti-Semitism. Used to be Goyim hated Jews. Why? Because they have those long noses. Can't stand us. But now, Goyim can say, oh, I don't hate Jews. Chas v'shalom. I hate Israelis. I hate Zionists. And up until a few years ago, that was even sanctioned by the United Nations. Because Zionism was racism. Who are the Zionists? Everybody from the Naturi character to the most left-wing guy with those long noses. Same hatred. Same people. But it's now under a mask of not anti-Semitism, Chas v'shalom, but anti-Israelism. So it didn't work. That wasn't the purpose of Eretz Yisrael. The purpose of Eretz Yisrael is the antithesis of that. Mamish the antithesis. There's a pasuk in a few weeks ago said, "Vo'avdil eschem min ho'amim li osli." I separated you from the nations of the world to be mine. Rashi comments al pi chazal, "Im atem muvdalim atem sheli." If you separate yourself from the nations of the world, you're mine. The imlav atem shel Nebuchadnezzar v'chaveiro. And if not, you belong to Nebuchadnezzar and his friends. Or maybe the pasuk shot is, if you separate yourself and don't do all these toevos, all these abominations that the goyim do, then you're mine. I'll protect you. If not, I give you into the hands of your enemies like Nebuchadnezzar. It doesn't say that. It says, Hare atem shel Nebuchadnezzar. You belong to Nebuchadnezzar. What do you mean you belong to him? And why Dafke Nebuchadnezzar? We have so many enemies. Why pick him? I'll tell you what I think. What that pasuk means. What that chazal means. Like we said, goyim only have to keep 7 mitzvahs. And if they remain in tune, in harmony with nature, and they do it for the right reason, because the Rebbe Hashem commanded them in the Torah, they'll get a chelik in Olam Haba for it, says the Rambam. That means that a goy could live, theoretically, the following kind of life, as illustrated by the following true story, and get a chelik in Olam Haba for it. Not that I intimate that this is the life that most goyim lead. Chas v'shalom. The fine goyim in this world who lead very fine moral lives and very noble lives. But if a goy lived the life I'm going to describe for you, he could still get a chelik in Olam Haba. I was once on a plane going from New York to Cleveland. And for some reason, the plane didn't take off. It taxied onto the runway and stopped on the side. and sat there, and it was getting close to an hour, and nobody was telling us why. Obviously, there was something wrong with the plane. They weren't taking off. So they wanted to calm people down. People were getting nervous. So they started giving out free drinks, and I don't mean Coca-Cola. So the Irishman behind me had a few of these free drinks, and he got really calm. So he started walking around the plane looking for friends, people he recognized who lived in Cleveland, who were back going back to New York, to Cleveland, where he lived. And he got all his friends, all the people that he recognized on the plane, about seven or eight people, and he told them to come by his seat. I was sitting right in front of him. So these people are gathered around the seat. And he tells them, I've got to tell you a story. You must hear this story. Now, by this time, he was talking so loud that if I was in the next plane with earplugs, I could have heard it. There was no way to avoid this. So I said, no, the son of the Rabbanim wants me to listen to this story, so I'm going to learn something from it. So I listened. And pretty much word for word, this is what happened. Guy tells his friends, you know that my wife died about 6-7 months ago, and I've been in a terrible depression since. And my son is a very wealthy physician in New York. He called me a few weeks ago, and he said, Dad, I know that you're depressed. I want to get you out of your depression. I want you to come at my expense to New York. You've never seen the big city. I will show you the town. Come for 10 days. I'll show you the sights of New York. So I decided I'm going to go. He put me up in a beautiful hotel, and every day he took me somewhere else. And really, it got me out of my depression. He says, but last night was the zenith, the peak of my trip. Last night, my son took me to one of the 10 most luxurious restaurants in the world that happened to be in New York. He said the name of the restaurant. I didn't catch it. I assumed that the hashgacha would not be up to my standards, so didn't make a difference. He mentioned the name of the restaurant. So we came to that restaurant. Couldn't believe how luxurious just the decor was. They sat us at a table that was fit for King Arthur. Sat in throne chairs. They gave us the menu. Half of the things on the menu I couldn't even read. But I noticed that the most expensive thing on the menu was a 3-pound steak dinner, 7-course dinner. You have to understand what that means. One of those big hamburgers in the fast food places, that's a 1/4 pound. 12 of them are 3 pounds. That means 12 hamburgers like that. It's a little cow. That's what we're talking about. And that's just the main course. Aside from that 3 pounds of steak, there's 6 other courses. The guy said, I said to myself, I don't know if I'll ever be in a restaurant like this again in my life. My son can afford it. I'm going for the top of the menu. So I ordered the 7-course, 3-pound steak meal, and I finished it. Soup to nuts. When I finished, I see the two distinguished gentlemen in tuxedos standing by the table. One of them has a scroll in his hand. The one with the scroll introduces himself. He says, I'm the maitre d' of this restaurant, and this is the owner of the restaurant. We want you to know that you are the 7th person in the history of this restaurant that finished the 3-pound steak meal and didn't ask for a doggy bag. Finished it completely. And we have a scroll printed up for occasions like this that we only have to fill in your name and the date, and we'll present it to you as a memory, as a remembrance that you finished the 3-pound steak meal in our restaurant. And they filled in the scroll, they signed it, and they gave it to me. The man now had tears in his eyes. He said, you have no idea how I felt with this scroll as a remembrance of the great feat that I did. He said, but that's nothing. He said, after that, they told me, look opposite your table. You'll see on the wall 6 bronze plaques with names and dates on them. Those are the 6 people who finished the 3-pound steak meal before you. Now, at that point, I wanted to turn around and ask him if there were little bulbs on those plaques, because it would have been a bad simon of what happened to the 6 people before. But I kept my mouth shut. And he said, they told me tomorrow we're going out ordering a 7th plaque with your name and tonight's date, and your name will be on the wall of this restaurant forever. Anyone who comes here will see that you ate the 3-pound steak meal and finished it. The man was crying now, mamish, falling, tears falling from his eyes. And he said the following. He said, "You don't have an idea how I feel. I feel fulfilled. I don't know if I have any other purpose to live." He said. At that point, I started to daven very, very earnestly that before this plane takes off, somebody get up and say they heard the story and they know of a restaurant that serves a 4-pound steak meal. What difference did it make? I was afraid in the Beis Din Shalmala they heard what he said and they agreed with him. He has no more purpose to live, and when the plane takes off, they're taking him down, and I'm sitting in front of him. I don't know if I have such zechuyos to be able to survive. So I was hoping he would have some purpose to live before they took off. A goy could live his life to be able to eat 3 pounds of steak in a restaurant, as long as he didn't steal the meat, he didn't curse HaKadosh Baruch Hu because it was too tough, he didn't murder anybody, he didn't serve Avodah Zarah, he didn't take the meat from a living animal, and he wasn't immoral, he'll get a chelek in Olam Haba. What about a Jew who lives his life in order to eat 3 pounds of steak in a fancy restaurant? What will he get? Not Olam Haba. How come? Because we have a different mission in this world. Our mission is to be a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh, a nation of kohanim. A Kohen is God's representative to Klal Yisrael. Shluchei d'Rachmona, the Shluchei d'Idon. We are the Kohanim of the world. We are God's representatives to the world. How do we fulfill that? We don't give out his calling card. I represent God. You need him? Give me a call. How do we represent God to the world? Very possible. By being a Goy Kadosh. By being a holy nation. By living a life where every aspect of life is holy. Not just moral. Holy. I'll give you an example of what that means. A few years ago, there was a Yid, from a Yid, an Orthodox Jew, in Boston. His name is Aaron Feuerstein. He owned a mill. And he employed 2,400 workers. And his mill burnt to the ground. Now he doesn't have a mill, and he doesn't have any workers, because he doesn't have a mill. Morally, he could have told all his workers, "Look, it's going to take me months to build up my business again. You're free to go find other jobs. If you want to remain and get a job when I build up my mill, fine, but for the next 3 months, I have no business." But he felt that he has to do more than what's moral. Nobody would have had any tainas on him. That's a moral thing to do. You don't have a business. But he made a kiddush Hashem, and he kept all of those workers on the payroll for 3 months until he built his business back. And he paid them $1.5 million amongst all of them every week because he decided that he's going to function not just morally, but beyond moral. That's Kedusha. That's how a Jew has to function. Not just what's acceptable morally, for that's a good for a goy. We have to, in our social life, married life, political life, economic life, be Kedusha. Every aspect of life, we have to function in a way that's godly. So when the nations of the world look at us, they say, "Wow, there must be a God. These people are godly people. The way that they function, the way they treat their wives and husbands, the way they deal in business, the way that they conduct their social life is a kedusha." That's the goal. That's what we're supposed to be. In order to do that, we have to be an Am Levada Gishka. We can't mix with the nations of the world completely. We have to be insulated from them, not isolated. Because isolated, we can't be a Or Lagoyim. We can't be a light, an example to them if we're isolated from them. But we have to be insulated from them. We have to be able to create our own society. where everything is Kodesh. Because if we mix with the Goyim completely, then we'll all reach the lowest common denominator. In doing so, we have to be a mikdash. For asuli mikdash v'shochanti v'socham. We build a mikdash, not that God should be in the walls of the mikdash. V'shochanti v'socham. God dwells amongst us. We are the mikdash. Because we are the place where God's presence is evident in this world by how we eat and how we sleep and how we treat our friends. And how we deal in business, and so on and so on. That we are the mikdash. That's what that chazal means. For avdil eschem min ha'amim lios li. I separated you from the nations of the world to be mine. If you separate yourself not from the abominable ones, not from the bad ones, but even from the tzaddikim of the umos ha'olam, the good ones. But they have one lifestyle and we have a different lifestyle. They have to be moral and we have to be holy. So if you separate yourselves and you create the kind of lifestyle that a Jew has to live, then lead and you're my representatives. Then you're mine. The in love, but if you don't, and you mix with them in a way that you end up having the same kind of lifestyle as them, then harei atem shel Nebuchadnezzar v'chaveiro. You belong to a very exclusive club. The club of Nebuchadnezzar and his cohorts. What did Nebuchadnezzar do? He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. You also belong to that club. You're also destroying the Beis HaMikdash. Except he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash of wood and stone, and you're destroying the Beis HaMikdash of your heart. You're destroying yourself as a mikdash. So you belong to that club. There's a Chiddush Yarim. It says in Shulchan Aruch, Roi l'chol yirei shomayim, li'os mis'abel u'mis'onein tomid al churban beis mikdoshenu. It's proper for every yirei shomayim to constantly mourn the beis hamikdosh. Says the Chiddush Yarim, why does it say it's only fit for yirei shomayim? Everybody should do it. If you're not a yirei shomayim, you may not do it. It doesn't start Hilchos Shabbos. It's proper for every Yerei Shemayim to keep Shabbos. Everybody has to keep Shabbos. If you're not a Yerei Shemayim, you may not do it. But it's not limited to Yerei Shemayim. Why over here does it say, Roy Lechol Yerei Shemayim? Says the Chiddush Yarim. Because if you're not a Yerei Shemayim, then instead of mourning over the Beis HaMikdash, first mourn over your own Churban. You're a Churban. That's more important than mourning for a building. But if you're Yerei Shemayim, so you're not a Churban, so then you can mourn for the Beis HaMikdash. I think we say that in Tachmon every Monday and Thursday. U'ra'eh yesh Shom Moseinu v'ho'ira shenikra shimcha aleh. First look at Shom Moseinu, look how we're Churban. And then ho'ira shenikra shimcha aleh. So that is the tachlis of Klal Yisrael. In order to be an insulated nation, in order to be able to create a society that every aspect of society is holy, we need a place where we can create that insulated society. Omad vayimod eidoritz. The Rebbe Shom measured every land. And he found no land more suitable to Klal Yisrael than Eretz Yisrael. And he found no people more suitable to Eretz Yisrael than Klal Yisrael. We fit each other like a glove. Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz Kodesh, which has Hashgacha Pratis, and we are an Am Kodesh that has Hashgacha Pratis. So this is the place where we can create that kind of society to its ideal. We can live when we have to in Golis and have very beautiful communities. But the ideal of being able to create a total Torah society where every aspect of life is Kodesh, so we can be that Mamleches Kohanim v'Goy Kodosh, it's only when we're in Am Levodot Yishkod and we live in Eretz Yisrael. That's what we can do here. Not to be like the great nations of the world. Not to be normal. To be super normal. To be different. To be coached. That's the purpose of Eretz Yisrael. So what's the purpose of Yerushalayim? There's a nusach in Alamichya. Brocha Achas Mein Shalosh. That's brought down in the Tur, B'Shem HaGaonim, and both the Vilna Gaon and the Balatanya, those who daven Nusach Ari, Paskin, that's the Nusach you should say. Regular Ashkenazim and Sfaradim don't have that Nusach. We have a different Nusach. What do they leave out? They leave out one phrase. In the end of Alamichya it says, V'aleinu l'sochav, bring us into Yerushalayim, v'samcheinu v'dinyona, v'nochal mipirya v'nizba mituva. That's what we say. Let us eat the fruit and be satiated from its goodness. The Vilna Gaon and the Balatanya, based on this nusach of the Akionim, leave it out. They don't say v'nochal mipirya v'nizba mituva. Why not? Because there's a Gemara in Sota. The Gemara says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu wanted so much to go into Eretz Yisrael? Daven so much, and he begged and pleaded. Why? The chilech on the period, sorry. Did he need to eat from the fruit? The Gemara says that with such bickel, as if that is definitely not a motivation to go to Eretz Yisrael to eat the fruit. That's not the purpose. El alakayim, all the mitzvahs that you have in Eretz Yisrael. If the Gemara says with such bittle that go tell yourself, eat the fruit, we can't even say it, but no, on the period of an Isma Mituba, it's Kamamish Kenegi, that Gemara. So they leave it out. There's only one problem. Even the Vilna Gaon and the Balatanya, in the beginning of Alamichya, say those same words. Alamichya val kalkola val knuvasasode, val eretz chemda tova rechova shuratsiswa vinchalto lavoseinu, Lechom Mipiria Velizbar Mituva. And they do say it there. Why is it okay to say in the beginning of the bracha and not okay to say in the end of the bracha? It says he gave us Eretz Yisrael to eat the fruit. I thought that's not a good reason to want Eretz Yisrael. Don't say it in the end. Why do they say it in the beginning? This Gemara in Pesachim, the Gemara says, how come in Eretz in Yerushalayim HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't put Chamei Tveria? Why did he put the hot springs in Tveria? Wouldn't it have been a covet for Yerushalayim to have hot springs? Right? Many people tell me that it's hard enough to get hot water in Yerushalayim altogether. So if the hot springs would be here, it's much easier to get a hot bath. That would have been nice for Yerushalayim. Or Peros Genusa, the Peros of the Galil. How come they're in the Galil and not in Yerushalayim? Wouldn't it have been covet for Yerushalayim had HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Yerushalayim have those special payers and not the Galil? Mer says, because three times a year we have to go up to Yerushalayim and we have to go out Aliyah L'Regel. And the Rabban Hashem wanted us to go L'Shem Shamayim, not for a hot bath, not for some good fruit. So he didn't put the good fruit in Yerushalayim and he didn't put the hot springs in Yerushalayim, so when you go up three times a year, you'll go L'Shem Shamayim. But Lamaisa, Chamei Tveria are in Tveria. And Peros Genusa are in the Galil. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael, like we said, is the place where a person has to adapt all of life, every facet of life, to Kedusha. Even how you eat the fruit. So in Eretz Yisrael proper, the fruit, eating the fruit is a very special thing. You eat it, the Kedusha, that's the purpose of Eretz Yisrael. But how do you know what Kedusha is? How do you know how to eat with Kedusha? Three times a year you go to Yerushalayim and you learn what Kedusha is. You see the Kohanim, Babel Dosom, Levim, Bechut Beduchanam, and you see the Rosh Yeshiva and the Sanhedrin, and you learn what it means, Kedusha. And then when you go back home, you apply it to your mundane everyday life. And everything in life, you are Mekadesh and live in a way of Kedusha. But you have to learn that lesson. So three times a year, you go to Yerushalayim, which is Kulo Kodesh, Ruchnias, and you learn the lesson, and then you go back home, and between the Yomim Tovim, you apply it to your mundane life. The first part of the bracha talks about Eretz Yisrael in general. Alamichyav al Eretz Chemda Tova Rechava Shuratzisim in Chalkal Voseinu. There it's okay to say Lechom Mipiryov Ezvamituva. Eating the fruit in Eretz Yisrael, in general, is a very special thing, because you eat it, b'kedusha. But the last part of the bracha says, Uvenei Yerushalayim Yirakodesh, Menheir of Yameinu, Va'aleinu L'socha, V'samcheinu v'vinyana. There they don't say v'nochamni period. Paris and Yerushalayim, no such thing. There it's kulo kodesh. There you go to learn. There you go to whack away. There you go to make a carbon. There you don't go to eat fruit. There you learn how to eat the fruit at home. So when we're speaking about Yerushalayim, we don't mention the fruit. I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Levi. Had he gone to Eretz Yisrael, he would have lived in Yerushalayim. So for Moshe Rabbeinu, the chilech on the period, sorry. But for other Yidden, Yishevet Yisachar and Zvulun and Naphtali, they live in Eretz Yisrael proper. For them, coming to Eretz Yisrael for the fruit is okay. Because they'll do it, they'll learn in Yerushalayim how to eat the fruit in Tel Aviv with Kedusha. That's the tachlis. Says, Kol ha-mesabel al Yerushalayim, Zoche v'roeh b'simchasa. The Mepharshim HaMadayik doesn't say Yizke v'yira, the future. It says Zoche v'roeh. If you know what's missing, if you know what's supposed to be, and what we don't have that society today. We don't have Eretz Yisrael, where we've developed a society that's kulo kodesh, where everything is godly. We're on the way. In Israeli society, at least the political sphere of living meets that standard. How do I know? Because when the nations of the world hear about Israeli politics, what do they say? Oh my God. So we are a symbol of godliness, at least when it comes to politics. I don't think that's exactly what the Rebbeinu had in mind, but Lamaisa, we don't have that. And we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And we don't have Aliyah LaRegel. So a lot's missing of what that ideal is. But if you understand what's missing, then you can appreciate what you have too. There's a lot of the glass empty, but there's a portion of it full. And we do have something. And you're able to sit here and learn and have an Aron Kodesh that has all these psukim about Yerushalayim on it. And it's not just something in Lawrence that, remember, hey, Yerushalayim, this is Yerushalayim, you're in the outskirts of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim Horim Savivla. You're in Hore Yerushalayim. You wouldn't be here if the Rabban Hashem didn't do us the chesed of enabling us to come back to Eretz Israel and to have some kind of sovereignty here. So we have something. We have something that our ancestors would have chalished for if they could be and live in Eretz Israel the way we do and create yeshivas and communities and build Torah. Torah in Eretz Yisrael today is the greatest it's ever been. Kamus-wise, at least. So there's a portion of the glass that's full and a portion that's empty. If you appreciate how much more there is and what it's all about and what's missing, then you can appreciate what's there. Because you know this is part of the whole program. And Binyan Yerushalayim is a process. Bonei Yerushalayim Hashem. Not Yivne Yerushalayim. It's an ongoing process. The Rebbeinu Shlom is building Yerushalayim slowly but surely. And I think the Rebbeinu Shlom is testing us. Before the Rebbeinu Shlom, the Netziv says, before the Rebbeinu Shlom changes his Hashgacha, he tests us to see if we're ready. He makes a dry run. And the Midbar was like that. Before we came to Eretz Yisrael and things became the Derech HaTeva, so when they needed water at the end of the 40 years, Moshe was supposed to speak to the rock instead of hitting it. Hitting is a miracle. Speaking wasn't to say, rock, we need water. It was to learn some Mishnayos, some Divrei Torah, Divrei Kfushim, the same thing they would do when you needed water in Eretz Yisrael and you made a tiny seaboard. And you got up and you said Divrei Torah and Divrei Kfushim. I think Mashiach and Yitzhak Hashem is around the corner, waiting anxiously. When Mashiach comes, there are going to be some major changes in Hashgachas Hashem and things that are going to be. We're going to have no Shibud Malchios. We're not going to be subjected anymore, subjugated to the nations of the world. We're going to all be in Eretz Yisrael. We're going to have a Beis HaMikdash. And we're going to have all Jews living here. So over the last 200 years, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam has been testing us. The first thing is, He gave Jews a place to live in America where for a certain degree there's no Shibud Malchios. You're not Meshubid to a Melech. America is different than all the other countries in the world. Because a democracy in America, no one confers on Jews rights. They're inalienable rights. Mashenkin in England, the Queen, the King, they confer those rights. Except they confer them with everybody. They decide tomorrow they don't want to give Jews rights, they don't have the rights. But in America, at least on paper, everybody has inalienable rights. So that's not Shibud Malchios to a certain degree. We're not Meshubit to anybody. So the Rebbe Hashem tested us. How are you going to deal when you're free? Are you going to be free to serve me? Or are you going to be free to run away from me? Some people are passing the test. Some people aren't. Then the Rebbe Hashem gave us back a small taste of Eretz Yisrael. Small portion. He's testing us. How are you going to deal with it? Are you going to use it properly to create a society of Kedusha? To appreciate it? For those people who don't live here, to make an attempt to live in Eretz Yisrael. Some people are passing, some people are not. And then the Rabban Hashem gave us back Yerushalayim. Mekomos HaKadoshim. Are you treating them with the proper respect? Do you appreciate them? Or Rachmana Litzlan, they become like museums. Some people are passing the test, and some people not. And then the Rabban Hashem brought Yidden from all over the world into Eretz Yisrael. A small, miniature kibbutz galios. Are you able to live with other Yidden? Or Rachmana Litzlan, if I bring all Jews together, you kill each other. Some people are passing. Some people aren't. Hopefully the Rebbe Hashem grades on a curve. And the ones that are passing make the difference. But in any case, so we have a tremendous opportunity. And we also have a tremendous, tremendous responsibility. Chazal say, V'hanetzach, Ho Hashem Agdula, V'agvura, V'atiferes, V'hanetzach, Zeh Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim connects us, L'netzach, with eternity. It's an eternal city. And it connects us with the past, connects us to the future. But the word Netzach also means L'natzeach, to win, to overpower, to make a battle and be victorious. L'netzach Yerushalayim, if we want to be connected to the Netzach, that Yerushalayim, then you have to fight for it. Fighting means, L'natzeach means, to fight Melchemta Shel Torah. You're doing a lot of fighting. You're making a lot of wars here. Every day, this Beis Medrash, it's a battlefield. Melchemta Shel Torah. And that Melchama adds more to the Kedush of Yerushalayim. It goes from these hills into Yerushalayim. And that strengthens Yerushalayim, brings us closer to the time that Yerushalayim will be filled with Kedusha. Some people are fighting for the character of Yerushalayim, to make sure that the Kedusha and Tahara of Yerushalayim is maintained, and things aren't done there that totally disrupt the character of what Yerushalayim should be. So that's a battle that's going on. In order to connect to that Netzach, you need also the Nitzuach. So Mirtz Hashem, if we appreciate what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, the taste, it's only a taste, and we appreciate how much more there is to have, and we work that we can use what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us to promote what's missing, to get the purpose of why He gave it to us, then in Mirtz Hashem, we will be zoche to not only see a portion of Yerushalayim, a kosel hamaravi, but we'll be able to see all the walls, not only of the Harabais, but of the Beis Hamikdash, reinstated. The binyan by Shlishi, the Biasko El Tzedek, Meher of Yomim.
Just for one more second, I want to...